भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Okay, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. It says five up there, but we're also doing the first text 2, 3, 4, and then 5 we do together because the other ones don't have purports. So I'll just read all the Sanskrit at once and then all the English at once so that we can focus on the flow of what the Bhagavatam is giving us. Shama varato jasaraja kundala twisho lasach tri pranam puja puman shri vatsa vaksha balayangolasa balayangolasa kiri the kanchi vanatari nupara madhu pratavrata vikushtaya svaya vira chita shri varamalaya hari prajapate vishwantama sarochasha vinashayam kanta nivishta kostuba tisha prasedu salilashayastadam parjam parishyavita bhokunamita yavantariksham chitrakhi jiva kalo vija sanjay vishwanagasha.
The body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, blackish in complexion, was free from all inebrieties. His lotus face, decorated with earrings resembling sharks, appeared very beautiful, and on his bosom was the mark of Srivatsa. He wore bangles on his wrists, armlets on his arms, a helmet on his head, a belt on his waist, and a sacred thread across his chest, and ankle bells decorating his lotus feet. An uncommonly beautiful garland of flowers decorated his bosom, and because the flowers were extremely fragrant, a large group of bees, making their natural humming sounds, invaded them for honey. When the Lord appeared wearing the kuskuba gem on his neck, his effulgence vanquished the darkness in the home of the Prajapati Kashyapa. At that time, there was happiness in all directions, in the reservoirs of water like the rivers and oceans, and in the core of everyone's heart. The various seasons displayed their respective qualities, and all living entities in the upper planetary system, in outer space, and on the surface of the earth were jubilant. The demigods, the cows, the brahmanas, and the hills and mountains were all filled with joy. So now we'll read this verse together. Text 5.
Shranayam shravanam dvadashyam muhurte vijiti prabhu sarve nakshatatarabhyash chakrustaj janmadakshinam. Word for word, Shranayam. When the moon was situated in the Shravana lunar mansion, Shravana Dvadashyam, on the 12th lunar day of the bright fortnight, in the month of Bhadra, the day famous as the Shravana Dvadashi, Mohorte, in the auspicious moment, Abhijati, in the first portion of the Shravana lunar mansion, known as the Abhijit Nakshatra, and in the Abhijit Mohorta, occurring at midday, Prabhu, the Lord, Sarve, all, Nakshatra, stars, Tara, planets, Adyaha, beginning with the sun and followed by the other planet, Chakru, made. Tat Janma, the birthday of the Lord. Dakshinam, very munificent. Dharmatman Prabhu, do you know how to turn off the fan?
No.
Oh, Jai, thank you. Okay. Translation. On the day of Shravanadvadashi, the 12th day of the bright fortnight in the month of Bhadra, when the moon came into the learner mansion Shravana, at the auspicious moment of Abhijit, the Lord appeared in this universe. Considering the Lord's appearance very auspicious, all the stars and planets, from the sun to Saturn, were munificently charitable. Purport. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, an expert astrologer, explains the word nakshatra tar vidya. The word nakshatra means the stars. The word tara in this context refers to the planets, and adya means the first one specifically mentioned. Among the planets, the first is Surya, the sun, not the moon. Therefore, according to the Vedic version, the modern astronomer's proposition that the moon is nearest to the earth should not be accepted. The chronological order in which people all over the world refer to the days of the week, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, corresponds to the Vedic order of the planets and thus circumstantiates the Vedic version. Apart from this, when the Lord appeared, the planets and stars became situated very auspiciously. According to astrological calculations, to celebrate the birth of the Lord. Okay. Om Jnanatim Yandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilita Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapita Mena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swaparantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrachatam Sahagana Raghunatham Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savarutam Parijanam Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vidamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagapate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastaste Tapta Kanchane Gauranki Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Siddhe Devi Prananami Hari Priye Vanchikalpa Turibhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavimbhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay. So in one verse, in one purport of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada says that we are hearing messages from Vaikuntha. So that's what we're doing here. And Srimad Bhagavatam has nothing to do with this material realm. So when we hear these descriptions of that we hear today of the Lord's form, when He's manifesting in this material world, we are actually having direct communication with the Lord's darshan. The divine form of the Lord, the deity form, is said that it could be made of a variety of material elements. It could be carved from wood or marble. It could be painted. But also the deity can form within the mind. It's non-different from Krishna. So when we hear these descriptions of the Lord's divine form, if we deeply absorb in these descriptions, then that form appearing in the mind is non-different. It's also explained that when one is engaged in remembering Leela, Leela Smarana, or hearing the Lord's pastimes, that if one is absorbed, then those pastimes reenacting within one's mind are non-different from actually being there and actually experiencing them. So we understand that the Lord's pastimes are considered Nitya Leela. They're always going on in one universe or another. And the pure devotees the power of the soul is so potent that the pure devotees actually expand themselves in different universes and to participate in the Lord's pastimes. So right now, as we speak, Krishna's pastimes are going on. And as we read this description of Vamanadeva, we understand that somewhere it's going on. So if we immerse ourselves very deeply, this will be to our greatest satisfaction. So here we're engaged. Srila Rupa Goswami says that the essence of all advice in Upadeshamrita is 24 hours a day to utilize one's time and always remembering, chanting and hearing about the Lord's name, form and pastimes. And in, also in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna that this is actually the highest realization one can come to, is to become completely absorbed 24 hours a day in remembering Krishna. But, you know, we have a problem. You know, the mind does not allow us to do that most of the time. Just like in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, when he was performing Sankirtan in the house of Srivas Thakur, and there was an uninvited Brahmana, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for some reason, was not feeling the ecstasy that he was used to feeling. And he was suspicious, and then he found out there was an uninvited guest. That uninvited guest was kicked out of the house, and Mahaprabhu returned to his original ecstatic state. So in the same way, if we have an uninvited guest in our house, the house of nine gates, the material body and the consciousness, in the form of our different anarthas, then this original ecstatic emotions for love of Godhead will not be manifest. So Krishna gives the solution in the very next verse, in the chapter 12. He says that if one cannot completely fix his mind constantly on my form and pastimes, then you take up the process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, and by following the rules and regulations, gradually you will attain a strong desire to attain me. So most of the time in the preliminary stages, while we're practicing Vaidhi Sadhana, Rupa Goswami also explains the concept of Bhoga Tyag. You know, some days we might be feeling some higher taste and feeling really absorbed, and the next day, you know, we're just struggling to, you know, fix our mind on our 16 rounds. And we might daydream of what material enjoyment might be like. So this is because we're afflicted by the jaundice of ignorance, as Rupa Goswami explains. But if we take the medicine every day of Shravana and Kirtana, eventually that disease goes away. So in 1960, I found this in a magazine compiled by Madhavananda Prabhu. He puts together different magazines, the different articles about Gaura Govinda Maharaj and Srila Prabhupada. And in one of those magazines, I found an excerpt from 1960. Srila Prabhupada wrote some commentaries on verses from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And he explains there that just as it's natural for a human being to cry or laugh or experience sexual desire, he doesn't have to learn it from some external source. But in the same way, he was explaining that when a person is diseased, he might be in a coma or might be paralyzed, he's unable to experience those natural symptoms. So in the same way, when one is covered by the external energy, something that's very natural to our nature becomes very foreign. Krishna consciousness is compared to the practice of devotional service is compared to a growing child. If that child just simply remains alive and gets his proper nutrition and stays away from disease, eventually he will reach the stage of puberty and sex life will naturally awaken within his mind. So in the same way as practicing sadhakas, if one just remains alive in devotional service and gets his proper nutrition and diet in the form of hearing and chanting, sadhu sangha, then this love of Godhead will naturally awaken within the heart. And there's another example given that just how it's natural for a baby, or it's natural for a human to walk, but still the baby has to learn when he's young. It's not that he comes out of the womb walking. So in the same way, we're just learning to remember what we already had. a pure devotee like the six Goswamis, and let's say like a new bhakta who just recently joined the ashram, they may externally be doing the same activities. You know, they're chanting a prescribed fixed number of rounds, they're reading from the shastra, and they're engaged in deity worship, but the consciousness is completely different. You know, they're on two different levels of realization. So when we see here that Vamanadeva is actually manifesting before Aditi, you know, face to face in his form, the Lord, it's so amazing just to like meditate how the Lord loves his devotee so much that he goes within her womb. You know, just meditate on that. Having the Supreme Personality of Godhead within your womb, and he manifests himself before you. And this isn't only a imaginary thing that we can have, but it's actually a realistic possibility for each and every one of us to see Krishna face to face. In the Adi Lila, Prabhupada explains how he actually gives the key to experience this. And what he says, the development of submissiveness is the cause of proportionate spiritual realization. So we all know that from Bhagavad Gita 4.11, you know, as you surrender to Krishna, he reciprocates accordingly. But Prabhupada says, the development of submissiveness is the cause of proportionate spiritual realization, by which one can meet Krishna in person as a man meets another man face to face. So not only is this a realistic possibility, but we were already there. And we were there in the spiritual world, associating directly with Krishna. And because we've gotten ourselves in a little predicament, now we have to work very hard just to come back to our natural habitat. So the mind is very tricky, as we understand. Krishna's, or Arjuna says, it's more difficult to control than the raging wind. So the mind will often trick us to think, you know, we hear about Krishna prema, going back to Godhead, and all this sounds nice, but compared to where I'm at, it sounds so far away. It almost sounds nearly impossible. I have so many obstacles in my way. But this is actually not the fact. The fact is that it's the closest thing to us. It's within our heart at every single moment. And Mahaprabhu gives the formula to come back to that natural state. It says, Cheto Darpanam Marjanam Bhava Maha Devagmi Nirvarpanam. This Sankirtan Yajna, there's so many different religious processes that will gradually purify one's heart. But this Sankirtan Yajna is compared, you know, different religious processes might be compared to having a pure diamond, but being corroded by so much dirt and gunk. And other religious processes might be like putting that gunk underneath a faucet, and gradually, very slowly, will it become, all that dirt come off and you'll have the pure diamond. But the Sankirtan Yajna is so powerful that it's like having that diamond full of dirt, but getting a brush and some soap and really getting in there and scrubbing it. It's the maximum amount of purification. And Mahaprabhu also gives the mentality one should have while performing Sankirtan Yajna. You know, Trinada Pisunichana Torodave Sahishnana Manina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahidi. So he's actually, Mahaprabhu's giving us guidelines that we can use as tools to measure our advancement in every situation in life. You know, in this situation, am I trying to be more tolerant than a tree? Am I endeavoring to become more humble than a blade of grass? Am I trying to act free from false ego, just trying to please Krishna? And one of the most important things is proper respect towards all living entities. And with that in mind, I'm just going to read a really quick story about Rupa Goswami. So as I was saying earlier, that if one meditates deeply on the pastimes, one can actually experience it directly. So while I'm reading this, I'm going to give you a chance to practice that. So this is it right here. So one day in Vrindavan, Srila Rupa Goswami was sitting wrapped in meditation. He was feeling great bliss in his heart. While he was sitting in his samadhi, he observed a wonderful pastime. The gopis were decorating Srimati Radharani while Krishna stood behind her watching. Krishna revealed his presence to the Sakis, bringing an increasing festival of joy to their hearts. But Radharani was unaware that he was there. In many wonderful ways, the gopis braided and decorated Sri Radha's hair. Then they placed a mirror before her. As she gazed at the beauty of her own face, Radharani also saw Sri Krishna's moon-like face in the mirror. Sri Radha became very shy and quickly covered herself with her cloth. The gopis happily laughed at this, and Srila Rupa Goswami also joined in their laughter. Just at that moment, a Vaishnava arrived who was very eager to see Rupa Goswami. Seeing Rupa Goswami laughing, the Vaishnava did not say anything, but feeling very sorrowful in his heart, he went to see Sanatan Goswami. And this Vaishnava was named Krishna Das, and he had a problem with his legs where he walked in an unusual way. So Krishna Das told Sanatan Goswami that when I went to go see Rupa, when he saw my presence, he started laughing. Krishna Das thought that Rupa Goswami was laughing at him. And Sanatan Goswami explained the whole thing, that actually he wasn't laughing at you, he was absorbed in remembering Krishna's Leela, and he was laughing at what was going on. But in the meantime, because Krishna Das felt a little offended from this, Rupa Goswami's meditation was broken, and he wasn't able to see Krishna's pastimes anymore. So many other things happen in the story. Krishna Das goes and apologizes to Rupa Goswami, etc. But the moral of the story is that even an advanced devotee, Nitya Siddha, like Rupa Goswami, if he slightly, seemingly, did, of course, this was all Krishna's arrangement to teach us a lesson, and he wasn't at fault, but if he slightly disrespects a Vaishnava, then Krishna becomes unmanifest to that Vaishnava's life. My spiritual master, he explains in a class, he was saying that one should cultivate the mood of seeing every Vaishnava as better than himself. And when we think of respecting all living entities, it's not a matter of just training your mind how to do it. Of course, that's there with using your intelligence, because we are trained to think the opposite. But it's a matter of just seeing reality as it is, understanding that every part and parcel of Krishna is very dear to Krishna. Every devotee that's sitting around you right now is actually a resident of Vrindavan, a resident of Vaikuntha. It's only a little bit of time that's separating the two. And not only people wearing dhotis and saris and kantimala and chanting japa, but every living entity is very dear to Krishna. And if you offend the part and parcel, then you actually offend the whole. You know, if I were to say, you know, Krishna, he's really awesome, I like him a lot, he's great, he's a great guy, but his arm is, I wish it was a different color. You know, it could look a little better. I wish his arm was different. You know, it's offensive. It's disrespectful to Krishna. So in the same way, when we offend the part and parcel of Krishna, Krishna doesn't like that. So, unfortunately, you know, we're in this predicament of thinking the complete opposite of Trinadapi Sunichina because of our minds being conditioned for so many lifetimes. But through strength and intelligence strengthened by hearing from the sadhus and studying the scripture, at least we can conscientiously train our mind to think in this way. And one of ISKCON's legends, Vishnujan Swami Maharaj, he had this broad vision. In the book Radha Damodar Vilas by Vyasaki Prabhu, there's different compilations of devotees sharing their experiences with Vishnujan Swami and Jayananda Prabhu. And one devotee was saying how Vishnujan Swami, he was so famous for making and inspiring so many devotees, because he had this mentality that it's not us and them. You know, it's not the society of Vaishnavas and then the non-devotees in the material world, but rather he saw that there's only us. It's a big Krishna-conscious family. And instead of having the mentality that there's Krishna consciousness and then there's the material world, Vishnujan Maharaj had the mentality of that it's a Krishna conscious world. And Prabhupada explains that this world is actually a replica of Vaikuntha. This is one of the fundamental principles in our philosophy, is that the Vaishnava is meant to live in Vaikuntha constantly, at every moment, even still while he's residing within this material world. And Lord Shiva explains also in the Bhagavatam that, you know, the Vaikuntha planets, the heavenly planets, hellish planets, they make no difference for a Vaishnava. Even the ecstasy one feels, one is not desirous of even ecstatic symptoms. One simply wants to please Krishna. Just like in Dwarka, Dwarka, when he was fanning Krishna and he started crying out of ecstasy, he thought that his ecstatic symptoms were getting in the way of his service. So he actually condemned his ecstatic symptoms. So because we understand that Krishna's form, that Krishna is absolute, so his name and his form are non-different. So we also understand that his pastimes and his holy dham and his service are also non-different. One may be somewhere in some tamasic parking lot somewhere distributing books somewhere in Russia or America, but factually that place is Navadvip, because Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement is there. And one time I had a dream that I was at a music festival, concert, distributing books in my dream. And all of a sudden, the whole festival transformed into Navadvip. And right in front of me was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur's house. And so I had my book bag, and I went into the house. And all that was there was a picture of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And when I saw that picture, I actually felt his presence. I felt he was really there watching me perform this service, and that he was so grateful for this insignificant amount of service that I can do. And Mahaprabhu explains to Sanatana Goswami in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that the sadhaka is actually meant to live a doubled life. Not duplicitous, but what he explains that the example given is the wife who has another lover, a paramour. And so the wife will perform her household duties even more nicely in such a way that her husband won't expect anything. But while she's performing her external household duties, her mind is thinking of her other lover. So in the same way, the sadhaka is meant to perform his devotional service for his own purification and for the pleasure of his spiritual master, but simultaneously be meditating on Krishna's form, name, and pastimes, like we're hearing here. And Krishna also explains this to Arjuna, you know, perform your prescribed duty of fighting, but at the same time, you know, be constantly absorbed in me. And this is the difference between our sampradaya and other sampradayas. Like the Tattvabadis, they teach that the highest goal is actually to go back to Godhead. But Mahaprabhu explains that the highest goal is actually to develop pure love of God. Now, if Krishna wants us to go back to Goloka Vrindavan, then ecstatic, you know, we'd love to go back. But if he also wants to stay here, then same, you know, ecstatic. Whatever Krishna wants, that's the mentality that we should cultivate. And just like that verse in Shikshashtakam, Ashlesya va paravratam panishtamam adarshanam marmahatam kurutava. Now, whatever Krishna wants, we're happy to do. And we see this is the mentality of Aditi. Because of her pure devotion, Krishna actually uses his pure devotees in such a way to facilitate his pastimes. So just like And Bhagavad Gita explains to Arjuna that all these soldiers are already put to death by my arrangement, but you can be just an instrument to fulfill this purpose. So in the same way, Aditi seemed to have some mixed devotional thoughts or desires. You know, she wanted her sons to go back to their rightful claim in the universal management. And so many pastimes or so many events take place in this pastime. We understand Paritinaya Saranam Vanishaya Chudiskutam Dharma Samstapnartya Sambhavami Yuge Yuge. So going back to the importance of respect, first of all, we understand that because Indra did not have proper respect for his guru, he lost his power. And because Bali Maharaj actually respected his guru properly, he gained power. And so, you know, we all know that demons took Indra's position, the demigods' positions. And then we understand from a few days ago, I was explaining how Aditi had proper respect to her husband, who acted as guru. And because she followed his instruction, the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself manifested as her child. One of the most important aspects of this pastime that we haven't reached yet is how all of this is actually to facilitate one main point, which was to give Bali Maharaj an opportunity to fully surrender. Now, we understand that Bali Maharaj is now the Acharya of Atmanivedana. And for all time, he is known as giving the highest epitome, the greatest example of full surrender. So this is actually the most important duty in the eyes of Krishna, is to make sure that every jiva soul attains pure love for him and goes back to Godhead. And I remember hearing a pastime with Narayan Prabhu and Srila Prabhupada. They were sitting together on a bench, sitting together on a little seat, and it was outside at a park, and there was a table in front of them. And Srila Prabhupada pointed at the table and he asked Narayan Prabhu, he says, "You see that right there?" And Narayan Prabhu couldn't see anything. And then he looked closer and there was a small little ant walking near the walking on the table. And Prabhupada told Narayan Prabhu, "Chant Hare Krishna to the ant." And so Narayan Prabhu gets really close to the ant and chants Hare Krishna. And then Prabhupada says, "Now give it a little prasadam." And Narayan Prabhu was just thinking, like, here's this person who's the spiritual master of the universe, who is in charge of a worldwide organization and so many duties to perform, translating so many books, thousands of disciples. But yet, he's very conscious about this small little ant, every living entity. And so although we have so many temples, so much property and money and devotees and books, all this is wonderful. And Srila Prabhupada said that even if one person goes back to Godhead, I consider that a success in all my endeavors. And I'd like to read one more thing in this connection. Maybe some of you haven't heard this before. In 1972, a letter to Sarup, Satsarup Das Goswami, Prabhupada writes, "It is better to maintain even one devotee than to try to convince others to become devotees. It is the duty of the GBC to maintain the devotees, keep them in the highest standard of Krishna consciousness, and give them all good instructions, and let them go out and preach for making more devotees. Your first job should be to make sure that every one of the devotees in your zone of management is reading regularly our literatures and discussing the subject matter seriously from different angles of seeing. And that somehow or other, they're absorbing the knowledge of this Krishna consciousness philosophy. If they are fully educated in our philosophy, and if they can get all the knowledge, and study it from every viewpoint, then very easily they will perform tapasya, or renunciation, and that will be their advancement in Krishna consciousness. So the first thing is to instruct all of your temple presidents and the other devotees to read daily just as we have done in the morning class in Los Angeles, reading one shloka each morning in Sanskrit, reciting it all together, and then discussing it thoroughly by seeing different new things. So you introduce this system and train the devotees first. Don't be too much concerned for the time being with non-devotees. Now we must fix up what devotees we have got in the knowledge of Krishna consciousness. Then we will succeed. What good are many, many devotees if none of them are knowledgeable? Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he said something very similar. He said that, I wish that every selfless, tender-hearted devotee in the Gaudiya Math is willing to shed 200 gallons of blood for the spiritual nourishment of every individual of this world. So, in our daily lives, we may be faced with many obstacles and difficulties in our service. In distributing books, you might have your false ego smashed a little bit here and there. But this is wonderful. It's the most wonderful thing. The understanding that Krishna is arranging, just like he arranged for Bali Maharaj to fully surrender. Bali Maharaj went through so much difficulty. But the ultimate goal of all those difficulties Krishna puts us through is this selfless service attitude, putting Krishna, Shishi Radha Shama Sundar, and all the happiness of all the Vaishnavas in the center, and taking our false ego out of the center. Just like Maharaj said a few days ago, to joyfully suffer. You know, Krishna consciousness is a joyful process, and in the meantime we go through so much purification. We understand that not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of Krishna. So this pastime that we're hearing here with Aditi having so-called, like I was saying, so-called mixed devotional desires, we understand that Krishna arranged this so that she had the opportunity to worship him and please him, and that he was able to manifest himself and now is giving a pastime to meditate on and to learn from for thousands of years in the future. A similar circumstance happened when Krishna came from the womb of Devaki. And Srila Prabhupada explains that when Krishna was in Devaki's womb, she was very effulgent. The whole room was illuminating. And one time, actually, Srila Prabhupada was on an airplane, and the devotee there recalls that one fellow passenger who was actually happened to be a priest, I think a Catholic priest, he told Prabhupada that your devotees are bright-faced, they're effulgent. And Prabhupada was explaining that that's because they're serving Krishna, and Krishna's more brilliant than a thousand suns. And so I've actually had experience of this, you know, being when I moved into the temple, I joined in Los Angeles, California. And a couple years later, two of my old high school friends also joined the temple. They were a man and woman couple, you know, fiancés. And I left for a month or two on traveling Sankirtan. And when I came back, the Mataji's face, I felt like she transformed. Like her facial structure changed, and she was brilliant like the sun. She almost seemed like she was floating. At first I thought I was hallucinating or something. And another experience I had was when one new bhakta left for some time to go out traveling, distributing books, and when he came back, same thing. He looked like the sun just floating around. So the verse in the purport actually explain a little bit also about the sun and how when Vamanadeva appeared, the alignment of the planets and the stars were very auspicious. So although this is true, you know, whenever Krishna comes, there's always the astrological arrangement of the planets are very auspicious, but this does not mean that the Lord is dependent on some seemingly auspicious materially auspicious circumstance. You see that whenever Krishna appears, in any shape or form, it makes any seemingly inauspicious place the most transcendental. Like Srila Prabhupada was here in the most holy place in the universe, Vrindavan Dham, the Radha Damodar temple, and decided to go to the most seemingly most inauspicious place in the country or in the world to preach Krishna consciousness. And even till this very day, you know, those places that Prabhupada walked are considered holy tirthas. Like in California, San Francisco, we have the Hippie Hill. You know, it's very famous on the videos. You see Prabhupada chanting there. And devotees actually, there's no monument there, there's no temple or nothing, it's just the hill. But devotees actually go there, they pay their obeisances because Prabhupada walked in that very place. So we see that in this whole world, there's devotees now going out on Harinam Sankirtan in the most crazy places. Downtown Los Angeles, New York, so many crazy people walking around, but they're transforming that place into Vaikuntha. One time I was, most of you are probably not familiar with the USA, but there's a state called Utah, and it's very famous for Mormons. A lot of Mormons are there. Very nice people, actually. But I was at a small college distributing books with one other devotee. And it's a very small college, so it's pretty obvious what we were doing. And in America, at the colleges, if you're distributing books, you're not... It's like a chintu beta beta tattva, actually. Like, you're not really allowed to be there, but you can kind of get away with it if you're slick and low-key. But and then some schools are okay, they'll let you do it. Some schools, they're really strict, they'll kick you out. But on this one occasion, I was... Just to give, this is an example how the most inauspicious place becomes the most auspicious. I was distributing books, and the security guard, we actually, in America, we don't call them security guards. We have a code word. We call them yamas, like the yamadutas, because they'll kick us out of the place. So we saw this yama coming, or I saw this yama coming, and I understood immediately that he was coming for me to kick me out of the school. Someone called in or something. So, very nonchalantly, I acted like I didn't see him because he was some distance away. And I walked into the nearest building. And immediately when I walked in to the building and the door closed, I started walking really fast. And I turned the first corner I saw and entered whatever door I saw. And it just happened to be the men's restroom, the toilet room. And I just decided to stay there for a couple minutes while the yama, or security guard, didn't know where I was, and he would walk down the hall past me, and I can get a slick getaway. But while standing there, I was thinking, why waste time just standing here? There were people in line to use the urinals to pass water. So I started distributing books to the people in line, the urinals. And so the urinals are right here, and then the toilet stalls are on the other side, and many of the doors are closed with people performing their duty, performing their business. And I was distributing books to someone in line to the urinal when all of a sudden someone in one of the toilet stalls shouts out, "Are you talking about Bhagavad Gita as it is?" And I said, "Yeah. You want one?" And you know how there's a door, and then between the door and the ground, there's a little space, you know? So I said, "Yeah, you want one?" And he stuck his hand out. And so I put the book in his hand, because I was just thinking, you know, it's not the best place to distribute books, but I might never meet this person again. He might not get another chance. So I gave the book to him, and eventually he came out and gave me a donation. So... places where caste brahmanas, you know, would never set foot, you know, the merciful Vaishnava is there giving the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is my fourth time in the Holy Dham, and every year it actually gets better and better, new realizations, and time to become very introspective, and more time for hearing and chanting and sadhu sangha. So I'm very grateful that I came here this year, and looking forward to another year of growth and service, and I hope to come back next year And I went on Navadvip Parikrama for the fourth time this year. And at the end, many devotees will share their realizations in front of the assembly of devotees. And I remember this very humble Chinese Mataji this year. She came up and she had a very strong accent, straight from China. And she was explaining how, you know, she had so much realization. She was saying how this whole Navadvip Parikrama, I felt, wasn't about me. It was about my association with the Vaishnavas. It was about my relationship with the Vaishnavas. And collectively offering our hearts to Lord Chaitanya. And she was explaining how if you offer one rose to the deity, it's a very nice thing. But better is if you have a whole garland of roses and you offer it to the deity. So in the same way, the assembly of Vaishnavas are our life and soul. You know, just offering one jiva to Krishna is very nice. But if we can offer a garland of jivas to Srila Prabhupada for Shishi Gaura Nitya's pleasure, then this is even better. So it's almost 9 o'clock. Maybe I should leave a minute or two if anybody has any questions or corrections. I'm happy to take any chastisements also. And if nobody has any questions, one person. Anybody else? One other person up there. Nityananda's mercy is inconceivable. You know, sometimes, like when I meet, sometimes in the West, I'll meet Indians, people from India. They're not really devotees. They have like this Hindu conception or something. And this has happened quite a few times. They see that I'm distributing books, and they actually try to correct me. They say, you shouldn't be just giving these books out to everyone and anyone, and you shouldn't be collecting donations for the Holy Scripture. You know, they think it's like blasphemous. So they don't understand Lord Chaitanya's movement. Like I was explaining, I didn't know if I would have a chance to meet that person again. So Krishna is transcendental to all these material considerations. You know, whatever works to help that spirit soul come closer to Him is what would please Krishna the most. Krishna's pleasure is considered the basis of our success, not following all these strict rules and regulations just for the sake of following them. So if one should intelligently understand what Krishna really desires and do that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Also, the same in the Chandra Krishna, there's no hard and fast rule for Chandra Krishna, right? No hard and fast rule. also destroy that through any circumstance and also distribute those.
Jai Shriman Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gopinandan ki jai.